Thank you very much, Honorable Minister of Agriculture, Sri B.C. Patil, Honorable Member of the Legislative Assembly, Sri Krishnappa, Honorable Ex-Vice-Chancellor, Dr. Chengappa, and several other Ex-Vice-Chancellors here, Honorable Vice-Chancellor, Dr. Prasad, senior members of the leadership on campus, including Registrar, Dr. Dhanpal, Deans, Dr. Savitrama, Dr. Devakumar, Director of Research, Dr. Shadakshari, distinguished faculty, researchers, ladies and gentlemen. Ellargu nan namaskara. Nam vyavasayadalli jaya kisan anta kandita helbeku. Eradu divasa late adru ellargu deepavali subhashayagalu. It's an absolute delight to be back on campus, although only virtually. I'm very, very honored to have been invited as the chief guest for the UAS Foundation Day. For me, this is a very big deal. As the first batch to graduate from GKVK campus, this is a particularly thrilling time for me to be back, though at the time we didn't have this beautiful auditorium in which you guys are sitting, which I believe was built during the administration of Dr. Chengappa. Let me first begin by congratulating all the awardees today. I know how hard all of you worked to be recognized at this spectacular event. I can only remember my days in UAS where being an awardee at the Foundation Day was an ambition that was way beyond my grasp and way beyond my reach. So it's truly a privilege for me to be in front of all of you. I am an unlikely chief guest at this function. There have been 100 occasions, maybe more, that I had wished I was a more diligent student when I was on campus. The old campus in Hebbal had a beautiful library, one of the largest in the country, which I think had over 60,000 volumes, a national award-winning cafeteria, and was a bit close to town in Bangalore. So to me, those held greater attractions than the classroom, even though I knew we had some outstanding faculty. So to call me a diligent student would be revisionist history, or to use current terminology, that would be fake news. Despite that, here I am today. I'm reminded of the US President George Bush, who at a Yale alumni famously said at their graduation ceremony, decades after he graduated, he said, "For those of you students who got A, I say congratulations. For those who got C's," he said, "you too can become president." All I say to you, regardless of your grades today, is you too can come back as the chief guest of the UAS Foundation Day. But truly, my time in UAS were defining years of my life, where I missed mentors in plain sight, when I was a rebel looking for a cause, and I had passion with no purpose. So as I was looking back at those times and I pondered my message to you today, it's simple really and lies in the transformative experience that UAS offers us. The pedagogy and the syllabus at UAS, if I had to describe it in one word, it's awesome. Unlike many undergrad courses, it is neither shallow nor diffused. It is as deep in its approach as it is wide. So beyond just agronomy, crop production, plant pathology, microbiology, seed production, the syllabus included dairy science, farm power and machinery, animal husbandry, agricultural economics, experimental techniques, statistics. So it just didn't teach just a particular course. It taught us how to learn almost anything. This multidisciplinary approach also encouraged critical thinking. It's not about finding answers to other people's questions. It's about asking your own questions. You know, I like to say you can Google answers. You can't Google for questions, at least not yet. So let me spend the next 20 minutes or so looking back, looking around, and looking ahead. Looking back at the Green Revolution, looking around at the Food Revolution, and looking ahead at the future of agriculture and our role and indeed responsibility in creating that future. We all know agriculture, like life, is back-breaking work. Ee vyavasaya aarambadalli aaramilla. But let me start with the Green Revolution. You know, I entered US a few years after India had launched the Green Revolution. Norman Borlaug and M.S. Swaminathan were already amazing heroes in our lives. And the Green Revolution they pioneered was nothing short of a global miracle. It was bold, far-reaching, and deeply transformative. Also, it was highly improbable. Yet, we know what happened. So much has changed since then. We warded off famine, not just in India, but in many developing countries in the world. We had not one, but three revolutions. The Green Revolution saw food production grow from less than 14 million tons when I was in campus to almost 300 million tons today in India. The White Revolution, which also was known then as Operation Flood, saw the dairy production go up from around 20 million tons to almost 190 million tons today, making India the largest dairy producer in the world. And a less talked about Rainbow Revolution saw fruits and vegetables skyrocket from under 35 million tons to the world's largest producer of fruits and vegetables at over 240 million tons. You know, for some of us, we saw prosperity beyond our wildest dream directly as a result of these revolutions. And our launch pad was significantly higher than any that our parents could have ever dreamt of. You know, after UAS, I went to business school to get my MBA. And I was struck by the fact that my first starting salary after my MBA program was greater than my father's last drawn salary as a gazetted officer for the government of India. Yes, so much has changed. But yet, Ivaga, if you talk to a farmer in Shimoga, Kolar, Raichur, Gadchiroli, Yavatmal, Amravati, or in Keldre, we know so much has not changed. Prosperous is not the word you will use to describe him and his family. That's the flip side of the Green Revolution. These 50 years has seen his yield increase, but his wealth stagnate. The soil that was fertile for thousands of years is now reaching toxic levels. The river and canal waters that irrigated his fields now are a source of pollutants, if they are a source at all. The synthetic fertilizers and pesticides that we used as our Sarva Roga Nivarane has polluted the aquifer below. Our agro-biodiversity has plummeted. FAO report noted that 90% of the crops have disappeared in the world since the Green Revolution. For instance, in India alone, almost 100,000 rice varieties were grown. Ivag Nordre, there are a few dozen. It's the same story for millets, pseudograins, lentils, vegetables. Most of the cultivars have disappeared forever. Ivaga, we have fewer insects that pollinate and greater insects that destroy. And of course, we have greater number of insecticides. Contact pesticides have become systemic. Organophosphates have become synthetic pyrethroids. Farmers and their families have become sick. And the Indian farmer suicide rates have become a topic of debate internationally. Ivag nodidre, we have sophisticated technologies at our fingertips. We can predict the weather, but the rainfall across the farms of India have dropped. We can predict pest attacks, but we cannot prevent them. We can predict drought, but we cannot avoid them. We can even predict the price of onions, but we cannot control them. And of course, we can predict the poverty of farmers and can do little to reverse it. Namagala, lot may have changed. clearly the farmer's lot has not yet. So which report card do we look at? The glitzy, modern, software superpower in the making? Or a country whose farmers are a long way from seeing prosperity? Jai Kisan and Theldre, just the beginning. A healthy farmer is the only harbinger for a healthy nation. The ancient texts in India had it right when they said, Anna Dhata Sukhi Bhava. In our company, Seesaw, which is the center for the spread of affordable wellness, we say it differently. Pay the farmer, not the pharmacy. India, Nodre, as a culture, our understanding of food is deep, and the whole science of Ayurveda included a detailed description of what to eat, who should eat what, and what benefits one might expect from the specific foods that we put into our body. Amazingly, Yajurveda, if you look at the Yajurveda, there is in the Chamakam, there is in chapter 4, in its entirety describes the power of grains, lentils and oil seeds that nourish our body and manifest themselves as an abounding force within us. I'll hear it there. Vibhuchame, prabhuchame, bahuchame, bhuyaschame. It means the grant of gift of nutritional abundance of all varieties of cereals, millets and corns. Vrihayaschame, yavaaschame, mashaaschame, tilaaschame, andre, you know, talks about paddy, black beans, black gram, sesame. You know, it goes on and on. It includes oil seeds, lentils, grains, honey, even barnyard millet. The biodiversity is reflected in the Rudram and Chamakam. In fact, chapter 5 of the Chamakam makes a commitment that we will protect the environment, including the mountains, the trees, the seas and the rivers that help these grains that in turn feed us. So much for our past. Instead of just the Green Revolution, I went back 4,000 years. But let me come back to today and talk about today and the food revolution. Let me take you to another world, 10,000 miles away to America, where I spent a big part of my life. Al Nodudre, the consequences of the Green Revolution were felt, where traditional farmers were decimated. Their lives were destroyed in many different ways. Turn of the last century, 40% of America lived in farms. Today, less than 1% does. Farm size there tripled, while the number of farmers reduced by 300%. In the same period. So that increase in farm size in America reflects both farm mechanization and corporatization. These advances in agri-science did prevent mass-scale famine around the world. But it turns out the price tag was heavy. We reduced crop diversity, increased use of chemicals, genetically modified foods, and subsidized agriculture for political gain or fear of social unrest. The consequence of this took a long time to be felt in the homes of consumers. You know, in the early 90s, when Meera, my wife and I, set up our food business, we actually saw a country overrun by large food companies that had used food science to enhance texture, color, shelf life, taste, sweetness. For most companies, they were pleased at the outcome. Their food company revenues grew, food inflation was low, consumer preferences for prepared and convenience foods exploded. But truth be told, the food industry was unwittingly supplying customers to the healthcare industry. Even Nodudre, 70% of foods sold in the US supermarkets are genetically modified foods. And not surprisingly, the US is now in the middle of an epidemic, and not just COVID, but of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, and cancer. Today, 70% of America is either obese or overweight. 1 in 10 Americans have diabetes. 1 in 4 of every death in America is due to cardiovascular disease. Or let me put it in perspective for you. Every 36 seconds, somebody in America dies of heart disease. It's easy to blame our genes. But actually, we know the truth. It's because our diet has been deeply influenced by the food industry. Truth be told, these consequences could have been predicted. The consequences of the Green Revolution on the one hand and food revolution on the other has also taken a toll on the environment. Very simply, we have plundered the surface of the earth, the air above and the crust below. Every year on an average, we deforest 70 million acres globally. That is the size of Karnataka. Every year we lose that amount of forest land in the world. We emitted 37 billion tons of carbon dioxide last year. It is 20 times the weight of all the cars on the road globally. 20 times that weight. We drill for oil relentlessly. Oil production today is 100 million barrels. That is about 5 billion tons a year. That is more than double the quantity of grains we produce every year, which means we consume more than twice the amount of oil than we consume food. The consequence of these is plentiful. Let me name just a few. Pandemics, we are seeing that. Pandemics, by releasing viruses and bacteria that belong inside forests that come out because of deforestation. Extinctions of thousands of species annually, upsetting our ecosystem. Conversion of agricultural land for animal feed. Increasing hunger and malnourishment and endangering public health. 77% of agricultural land today is used for grazing or for growing animal feed. 77%. Yet this gigantic 77% only supplies 17% of global calories and only 1/3 of the global protein. And a staggering 40% of all the grains we produce are actually used to feed animals, not humans. The best of intentions can have unintended consequences, which one might argue could have been foreseen. The Green Revolution certainly solved hunger, but kept the farmer poor and the globe warmer. Food science, which in the same period as the Green Revolution made startling progress, prevented food inflation, improved corporate profits, but affected public health and added to an increased carbon footprint. So now we come to an interesting fork in the road. Where do we go from here? Because lessons from the Green Revolution, the food revolution, and climate change can allow us to predict the future of doom or can energize and galvanize us to create a new tomorrow. Imagine a world where farmers truly prosper, where it is Jai Kisan. Consumers eat healthy and food companies transform. That's the world I'd like us to dedicate ourselves to. And I invite you all to join this journey. A beginning actually has already been made. Let me start with climate change. The Paris Accord, notwithstanding President Trump's recalcitrance and foolishness, is a promising beginning. The emergence of electric vehicles, the increasing biodiversity in consumers' eating habits, the major backlash against deforestation, the recycling frenzy are all green shoots in reversing climate change. It's not enough for businesses to follow sustainable practices only when they make business sense. It is the social responsibility of businesses to make business sense out of sustainable practices. Let me move to the food industry, where I spent most of my life, my professional life, where the US became a crucible for mega trends in the early 90s that has since spread globally. Three of them in particular: natural foods, convenience foods, and multi-ethnic specialty foods. These three big mega trends are shaping our future, our wellness, and even the well-being of our planet. The first is natural and organic foods, where consumers are increasingly conscious of what they eat and are wary about chemicals in their food. The second is convenience foods, nuclear families, women in the workforce, many more distractions in life than before, multitasking, and less time at home has led to explosive growth in convenience foods. And the third is multi-ethnic specialty foods. Each of us consumes multiple cuisines in a week around the world. The changing demographics worldwide, increasing human mobility, and the emergence of global food brands is taking our traditional palate on a world cruise. That's how our company Tasty Bite was born, at the convergence of this Venn diagram of natural, convenient, and specialty foods. You know, the food industry needs to realize that it holds the wellness of consumers in the palm of its hands. We are what we eat. That's what Ayurveda has taught us. Our health, our wellness, our emotions, our choice of friends, even who we invite home for dinner, are all driven by the choices we make on our foods. It's no longer enough for food companies to ask, what is my share of market, share of wallet, share of mind, share of stomach, or share of daily calories, or share of plate? No. The real question brands must ask is, what is my share of consumer wellness? It is time for the food industry to take accountability for the well-being of the planet and the wellness of the consumer. And I know that food science has evolved since the 70s and the 80s, and we no longer need to rely on Codex Alimentaria, on chemicals, on artificial color, artificial preservatives to deliver on texture or great tasting food. Science is not a tool for reducing costs and increasing profits alone, but is an option for improving our well-being. Which now brings me to the third part of my talk, which is the future of agriculture. The future of the farm, the farmer, and food. You know, I'm particularly pleased that an amazing initiative has been started in the world, of which we are a part of, called the Periodic Table of Food Initiative, PTFI. It is important for us to go past the simple macronutrients in food, like carbohydrates, proteins, fats, and some fiber, and some obvious micronutrients like vitamins and minerals, to be the only basis of defining the nutritive value of food. We need to dig deeper, way deeper. That's what PTFI is trying to do. It's a global effort currently funded by the Rockefeller Foundation to create a public database of the biochemical composition and the function of food we use, eating, using mass spectrometry, artificial intelligence, and bioinformatics. This is pioneering work, and I am pleased to see our Honorable Vice Chancellor Dr. Prasad and the Director of Research and several eminent faculty and researchers at UAS, with the ever-guiding hand of our ex-Vice Chancellor Dr. Chengappa, lending their support to this global effort, which will result in years of seminal discovery that will lead to a heightened awareness around the world that we are indeed what we eat. The convergence of information technology, genetic research, and initiatives such as PTFI will only enhance consumer wellness and will also provide a new hope that farmers can prosper. Let me paint this picture more fully. You know, for some strange reason, Silicon Valley, the boom for the last 30 years that literally changed the lives of billions of us, entirely bypassed agriculture and the farmer until now. That is slowly beginning to change, and we are seeing now the catapulting, call it a double promotion, of the industry from Agri 2.0 or the Green Revolution to Agri not 3.0 but 4.0, that some have called the Evergreen Revolution. This is taking many forms, and I'll just give you a few. The first is, there is a concerted, even if some might say clumsy, effort to bring farmers closer to consumers. with enabling technology. The APMC bill in India and the ECA, the Essential Commodities Act, are two such examples. There is an increasing realization by governments of the need to hand back the power to the farmer by disintermediating the middleman. China is a sterling example of the success of this measure. Consumers can now buy straight from the farmer on their e-commerce platform. A next generation high-tech supply chain ensures delivery nationally to Chinese homes within hours. Farmers make more money, consumers eat freshly harvested produce, and they pay less. And the farmers earn more. This is one. Second, after ignoring agriculture for the last 30 years, Silicon Valley has finally arrived in the farm. Artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, drones, and fintech entrepreneurs have come up with imaginative ways to provide better intelligence to the farmer. This is not to enhance yield alone, but to increase revenues to farmers by better market information and intelligence. So extension will take a totally new direction in the years to come. Third, precision agriculture. We spoke a little bit about it earlier today, like hydroponics, aeroponics, aquaponics, vertical farming, controlled environment agriculture. These will provide new opportunities for farmers to come together to fully benefit from the potential that these new technologies offer. Yields are increasing 70 to 100 times open field agriculture in specific crops, and they use no fertilizer or pesticides. The future will clearly lie not just with the progressive farmer, but with the progressive entrepreneur. As Dr. Chengappa, our ex-vice chancellor, used to say, the farm is a firm first. It's another way of saying that you, the students who are gathered here today, have an amazing future ahead of each of you, much more so than any generation of agriculture graduates in history. What is open to you is not mere academia, university jobs, jobs in plantations or traditional public sector and private sector companies. But what has now opened up to you is an incredible opportunity to participate in the creation of a new tomorrow. Imagine a world where, imagine a future and spend your life in making that future come true. Allow yourself to believe that you are not just a product of your village, taluka, district, state, or even country. It may be hard for you to believe, but many of you will not remain in your districts or in your state. You will be in far-flung parts of the country. Many of you will move overseas. In fact, in UASL Nodadre, in the US Agricultural University landscape, literally hundreds of NUM University, UAS alumni are famous scientists, researchers, and even bureaucrats. You will not merely be in your chosen field of specialization or electives, but you will reach for expertise in disciplines far flung from what you're familiar with today. Only because you can. Even as we embrace science, let's ever be watchful about what not the possibilities are, but also what our responsibilities are. GMO comes to mind. Yes, we have the power to genetically modify an organism. Yes, we have the ability to put a gene of a bacteria into Oryza sativa and call it golden rice and claim it can prevent blindness in children. Jopana, beware of false claims, irresponsible research, and let your conscience and your knowledge be your guide. I'm going to leave all you students, learners, researchers with five takeaways. First, think big. Think global. Believe that you can solve big problems in society. The power of what is possible, even if improbable, is huge. You'll be surprised that the amount of personal effort it takes, whether to build big, dream big, is the same as building small, thinking small. Because time is finite. Outcome and output need not be. Second, don't turn your back at the first hurdle or with the first failure. Yakendre, if you don't see darkness, you probably won't appreciate the light. If you don't face injustice, you will forget about being just yourself. If you don't face discrimination, then probably you and your ideas are probably not important or not different enough. A little restlessness without being unhappy will keep you energized. Third, believe in your ability to make a difference, notwithstanding your grades or what your family and friends might think of you as your limitations. Be aware of them, but don't be shackled by them. All of us are essentially very ordinary. It is what we do that makes us extraordinary. Four, become a collector of mentors. They could be members of your family, your teachers, your bosses, even your friends. And don't worry about impressing these people. Instead, learn to be impressed. Don't burden yourself to inspire others. Instead, be inspired. The ability to allow mentors into your life, yet hold deep personal conviction, will give you wind beneath your wings. And finally, remember the difference between prayer and meditation. You know, sometimes in prayer, you are reduced to merely asking. You've got your hand out. In meditation, you commit to who you are and what you will do. You don't have your hand out, you have your hand on your heart. So even as you pray, meditate. You will be amazed at the power that your own commitment will unleash. Think about this. Would you rather be employed or be an employer? Would you rather have a job or create jobs? Would you rather draw a salary or create wealth? Would you rather demand the right to live in a future which you cannot predict? Or would you rather predict and create the future of your dreams? At any rate, which is more fun? It may be difficult sitting here in GKVK campus to imagine a world thousands of miles away, or a time years and perhaps decades away, with friends from other genders, races, countries. Each of these will define who you become. It may be difficult for you to imagine you as the hero and the heroine in a story that you think you don't belong in. But I know I am looking at that heroine. I am looking at that hero. I am looking at you. And as I like to say, if you look where I am looking, you will see what I am seeing. I am seeing a beautiful future and change makers all around me today in this auspicious UAS Foundation Day. You have lots of work to do. So goodbye and good luck. May you live your dreams. Jeevan Bhadrani Pashyanti. Thank you.